66 years, we went from being stuck to the ground to going to the moon, to the stars. That was in 1969. 1964, the 737-100 was designed. In 2020, we're still in the 737-100. So, other areas of the world's economy have moved on so much. In the 1960s, we were using the slide rule. Mr. Hewlett and Mr. Packard weren't even in college in Penn State at that point to invent the calculator. So the technology that has moved the planet forward over the last 60 years has been fairly limited in its impact in our industry. And perhaps that is one of the reasons why today we do see this industry coming in for so much criticism in terms of the environment. Now, it is a very public industry, as we all know, and we could do a lot more to defend the industry publicly, and I'll touch on that in a minute. But certainly, it does appear that for the human race that went from being stuck to the ground to the moon in 66 years, and we're still flying the same commercial airplane, it does seem that our ambition is somewhat stunted over the course of the last few decades. That is a product of a duopoly. If you're in a duopoly, it's evolution, not revolution. As Boeing saw, it hardly pays to take the financial bet of a moonshot on the 787 or Airbus on the 380. So that is where we are with the duopoly. I don't see a revolutionary change anytime soon in how airplanes fly. So I think when it comes to the climate change issue, we are not going to get tremendously better over the course of the next 10 to 12 years. Perhaps we will see an engine that can deliver another 10 to 15%, and there may be some difference to the architecture of aircraft. We may have open rotor engines at the rear of the airplane, but there won't be, I believe, a fundamental breakthrough where we're not reliant on kerosene. That doesn't appear to be likely. So we have to eliminate waste from the aviation chain in terms of how we burn kerosene, improve air traffic control. And as an industry, look, we all make a living off this industry. It's a tremendous industry. But, and it does so much good. It does so much good for the planet. It generates so much GDP. It brings people together. That's what aviation does. It's been a tremendous driver of change around the world. However, when it comes to us defending our own business, we are at best disjointed, at worst useless. There are many bodies out there that represent this industry, and there's no doubt that the key issue that's going to come at us is going to be the environment. It's going to be led by Europe with taxes, as we can see already. They are coming. There's going to be more of them. But we have to show, as a group, there has to be a body that represents this industry better than IATA is currently doing. IATA is largely not, is generally not present in the public discourse around the environment. It's an entity that we all pay an awful lot of money to represent us. And this is the key issue at the moment. How do we sell this industry better? Because there is room to improve what we can do, but we are not as bad as we are painted in terms of the environment. Shipping is a lot worse. There are many other industries that consume a lot more than us, but we are a very public industry and more must be done. I don't have an answer for it, but I think it's something that everyone in this room and everyone here in Dublin this week has to be conscious of. Because if the governments are left to their own devices and we don't act together, we will see taxes coming into this industry, more restrictions on the industry over time. It will be led by Europe, but it will be followed elsewhere in the world ultimately. And this is what pays the bills for all of us. So then switching to the MAX, what do we think at the moment? Certainly, look, there's been lots of missteps by Boeing along the way. There's no doubt about that. And Boeing has come in for a tremendous amount of criticism. A lot of it deserved, of course. But Boeing is still a tremendous company. It has done tremendous things over the last 100 years. I do believe that this airplane will get fixed. I do believe that it will fly. I believe it'll be perfectly safe to fly in time. Of course, the concern that you have as an industry of this airplane is, what is the life cycle? When you invest in an aircraft or you operate an aircraft, if you operate the airplane, you don't want to be stuck with an aircraft that could be replaced by a superior model within 10 to 12 years. That's the biggest risk as an operator and an owner. The concern would be that Boeing feel they could throw in the towel at the MAX and replace the airplane as soon as possible. That would be the biggest risk. I'm sure Boeing are thinking about alternatives. However, while it's alarming what I just said, it's a huge decision for Boeing to take as well, because if they were to do that, if they were to replace the airplane, which many people will be talking about this week, the practical realities are that very few people will continue to buy the MAX, certainly anywhere near the price that are currently buying it, which would mean that Boeing's main cash machine, the 737, would not produce much cash. People would want to buy the airplane, and it would be an awful long time before a new aircraft came to be as well. So you may hear doom and gloom stories about the MAX this week and people saying they're definitely going to replace it, they're going to do that. I think you have to look at the underlying capability of the Boeing companies to do that at the moment. Bear in mind, Lehman's had more equity than Boeing has today. Boeing actually has a negative equity position as a company. As public information, as in all their financial accounts, they've had that for the last couple of years. So their ability to actually replace that aircraft is difficult. This would be a real challenge for them. So while the MAX has had its problems, I do believe that it will fly. I do believe it will be safe. And I think that certainly there is a possibility that Boeing will replace it sooner, and that will be one of the discussions during the course of the week here. However, I think if you look at the facts on the ground for Boeing, it is very challenging for them to do that. And the 737 has a tremendously loyal following as an aircraft type all over the world. Many airlines still have tremendous respect for Boeing despite what's happened. I do think that if Boeing could take a softer line than some of the customers, they've been in the position over the last 100 years where they've been the dominant player and they can just generally say no to people and get away with it. That is changing a little bit. And I do believe that that is a job for the new leadership in Boeing, is to try and soften the tone of how they've treated customers over the course of the last few years and on the early days of the MAX groundings. But I think that if they do that, I think they will earn back the trust of some of the customers, of many of the customers, I believe. So what I'm trying to say is that this week, the MAX will come in for a lot of criticism. Some of it, I believe, will be one person who's trying to outdo the other on the extreme nature of how much they can criticize it. The reality is, it does have a tremendous company behind it, despite its missteps. It does also have a huge installed base from its previous generation, the 737-800. The real threat as an owner or operator that Boeing would replace the airplane quite soon, I think that will be difficult for Boeing to do. So I think you have to just bear in mind the course of this week, keep things in balance when we hear people talk about the MAX and its future. Let me just stop there for a moment. And a couple other topics. Let me just stop there for a moment to see if there are any questions around the room. Sure, somebody must be thinking something.
I really don't want to discuss the MAX situation as I work for Airbus, ladies and gentlemen.
Full disclosure.
Gus, you start the conversation this evening talking about environment, and then you talk about the 737 and how 972, there was the 737-100, and we've still got
64.
Okay, so my issue is the lessors, and there are one or two of you here, rely on a 25-year economic life depreciation. So what are your thoughts about the environment where we need to advocate, as you said, your 66-year moonshot and a rotation of technology and an economic life that must get shorter if that is the solution to the environmental pressure you're on with the aviation finance and leasing industry, which requires something which is balanced today at around 25 years. How could those 2 years things equate or be balanced?
It's a fair question, Mark. So we talk about the environment. What can we actually do? You know, that's the question. What can we actually do, given where we are in the industry at the moment? The truth is, there isn't an engine technology that can deliver a significant saving in fuel burn at the moment. The advancements in propulsion technology are coming from the automotive industry at the moment through the form of battery power. However, we can only piggyback on that as an industry because we don't have the scale of the automotive industry. They make more machines in a day, Volkswagen does, than the whole of the industry makes they make more in a day than our industry will make in a year in terms of units. They have much bigger resources than our industry. So if we're going to go to electric, at the moment that isn't feasible, but in time, maybe with the evolution of technology on the automotive side, you might. But in the automotive industry, for Tesla, for Volkswagen, Mercedes-Benz, once they get to a range of 1,000 kilometers, the benefit of any more R&D spend is de minimis, because the consumer who buys the product won't pay for it. They'll pay up to 1,000 kilometers. So in our world, in the aviation world, it's highly unlikely that we'll be able to piggyback off that technology to bring us a different form of propulsion that doesn't burn kerosene anytime soon. Now, give it enough time, maybe we'll come up with something else ourselves, there'll be some other breakthrough in technology. So Mark, to answer your question, I think that for the course of the next 10, 15 years, it's unlikely to see a breakthrough. However, there is a lot of waste in our system. Flights around Europe take longer now than they did 20 years ago. It takes longer to get from Dublin to London today than it did 20 years ago. It takes longer to fly over France than it did 20 years ago. When there's anything goes wrong on the east coast of the United States, if there's a rainstorm, ATC, you know you're all going to be delayed flying into JFK or out of JFK. So there's a lot we can do to minimize the amount of fuel we are burning. But also, as an industry, Mark, I do think, and we've seen this, we're not used to facing the consumer. There's only one part of our industry that faces the consumer, that's the airlines. The rest of us wouldn't know a consumer if it hit us in the side of the face. And so the consumer, of course, elects governments. Governments listen to consumers. They're not going to listen to big business. So I do think, as we've seen with Boeing's missteps on managing the PR of their business, that it is vital that as an industry, an effective body or voice emerges over the course of the next year or two to start to seriously influence public opinion on the impact that aviation is having on the environment. At the moment, IATA, as I said, is largely absent from that public discourse, certainly in Europe at the moment. More must be done there, because we are made out as villains and seen as big business. It's very easy to point at us every day as the aviation industry. But the truth is, you know, while we burn 11% of all the gas in the world, we're only responsible for 2% of the emissions. So we're not the worst out there at all, but we do have one of the worst reps. So because we're business to business people mainly in this room, apart from Sean down the airline side, we don't realize the impact of publicity and PR. We've seen that with Boeing. So I think that is an important aspect of how we go forward. Is there another question before we go on?
Yeah, this one.
Hello, Gus. Nick Feduca. You were cautious about the MAX, but cautiously optimistic. You have a large portfolio or order book of the aircraft type. Can I ask you, given that confidence, can you forecast the residual value for 5 years and 10 years? Windows
for the
Max.
I was going to say if I could do that if you were not. It's my job to try and do it, but at any rate. I think that the Max, the return to service of the Max and how it's managed, both from the two OEMs, CFM and Boeing, and from those entities that are providing MAX to the market, that would be the lessors and the OEMs. On the operational side, it's absolutely critical that this airplane returns to service when it comes in a very smooth fashion, They take their time, nothing is rushed. There are almost 400 aircraft that have been stored at 80 different locations around the globe, subject to different types of weather. That those airplanes are prioritized, they fly without a hitch. And it's absolutely vital. And I do think that Boeing and CFM are very focused on that, because if anything else was to happen, that would be the end of it. In-flight shutdowns are just part and parcel of our business. They happen, but they do have to be minimized, and if something goes wrong, it has to be controlled immediately, and there must be a plan for how to deal with that in the media if there are in-flight shutdowns and you hear stories of passengers, I saw flames from an engine, of course it immediately goes out, but I think that's very important. Now, the other thing about residual value, so assuming that operationally the airplane works and is smooth re-entry, residual value, at the moment, we all know that when the MAX comes back and we're going to have to stimulate the market a bit with price. We're just going to have to get a few people over the line to say, all right, go on, look, there's a good deal here, take it. But I do feel that people have to be very thoughtful and disciplined when they offer those prices. And they have to remember that there's only one competitor for that aircraft. And that competitor is trading at a significant premium. Today, the A320 trades at a significant premium to the MAX. And so, as we start to offer these airplanes, either from the OEM or from the lessors, it's vital that people don't panic, and they don't say, oh my God, I've got only the airplanes, I'll never be able to place it, I've got to give it away. Because if many people do that, it will take longer and longer for the aircraft to recover, because the chat here next year will be, oh, someone gave me a MAX for, you know, half nothing, or PBH or something crazy. If that happens, if one person does it and a few more follow, it will take longer and longer for the value of that airplane to come back. What the owners of those MAXs have to realize is that there is significant demand for it. The competing airplane has production problems of its own. The MAX has an install base on the 737-800. Everybody needs to keep a cool head when they're placing those airplanes in the market and realize the value of it. They'll only be shooting themselves in the foot if they panic. So for me on the residual value, I think that it's very important that those that are providing capacity into the market are disciplined and thoughtful when they do it. I understand that there's gonna have to be a few airplanes offered at cheaper prices than you would like to. But over the medium term and the short term, that market will come back because the competing product isn't available, it's not going to be available for a few years, and it has an installed base that wants to transition into it, assuming that on the operational side, it's a flawless re-entry. That is, of course, vital. And on the PR side, that there's a significant improvement from how Boeing are dealing with that. Chrisman.
Your voice does carry on.
That's fascinating, but I think you're crossing over something. Why did it happen? Why was it allowed to happen? We have an issue with regard to certification authorities, be it FAA or AES, but this is something which is fundamental to this industry. It's going to affect the 777X possibly. You point out the start of the 737 program. That's grandfather. Things are going to have to change in this industry, I think, to actually get the public to believe again. That, I think, is the fundamental. What you've been talking about is actually a byproduct. You've got to actually look at the way that the oversight of the manufacturers moves forward in the future. Thank you.
Thanks, Crispin. That's a point very well made. Public confidence has been shaken in the aviation industry. Now, why did it happen? Look, Boeing is a hugely powerful entity. It had unusual power over the regulator in collaboration with the regulator. Boeing's employees were self-certifying for them. Now, we know that that is commonplace in some parts of the approval process for all of the OEMs. However, in the case of Boeing, perhaps, and I don't know this, Crispin, this is just based on what we hear, that it went too far in this instance. And that it is fair to say with Boeing that Wall Street was an obsession. And the customers, the suppliers, and the employees were completely secondary to that. As I mentioned, this is public knowledge. Boeing had a negative equity position on its balance sheet because everything went to the shareholders. Every dollar went to dividends and buybacks. So if that was the case, how do you fund a business with no equity? But you fund it by selling your product forward into the future and getting people to pay for it before they get the product. And that's why certification had to happen quickly. They had to be able to sell the airplane. They'd be able to get the cash in the door. They didn't do that. Wouldn't be able to do that. So I think there was, Boeing, as I said, has a tremendous company, has a tremendous history of a great respect for the company, but I think culturally, over the course of the recent past, the main stakeholder it's been looking out to has been its shareholders. And I think maybe you could say that its market power that it had with the regulator is perhaps abused somewhat in order to satisfy the requirements of another stakeholder group. To be fair to McChrystal, I don't think that will happen again. I think that maybe it may not be as profitable a company as it was, but those profits may not have been as solid as we thought they were. But I do think that the days of when there was large scale self-certification, I think, are behind us. Thank you. Another question? Robert, you look like somebody lying down there.
I was just thinking, I heard Mark say that he was advocating the Boeing 737 is up to 66 years of preaching life.
Robert, did you like to tell you something?
I'll save it for you.
I'm conscious now. Is there another question before I just one more topic before I talk about it? Any other questions out there?
I would just say one quick thing. We discussed it over supper. Robert Martin and our dinner in Hong Kong mentioned it. Mark, being right, knows for a fact there's nothing wrong. We do need to go on the front foot. We discussed it earlier. I'd be an advocate, Robert Martin would be an advocate, of the OEMs putting away from air shows. We've got to get the optics right, and it'd be a cheap, quick giveaway to the OEMs and a member of Robert Martin pondering how you can orchestrate this. Would you support that? Would anyone support that? It, you know, not only are the air shows very optics, they're associated
early
with
night for us.
And so we've got to get all our optics right in the industry and get on the front foot. And I think a quick, cheap optic would be to the OEMs to pull away from the air show. Now, there'll be controversy around that, but it'd be an easy giveaway. And we've got to